Late Night Live. Ideas and opinions from around the world.
Paul, I cannot imagine why you're playing the happy theme tonight. This program desperately needs the sad version of the Waltz of the Wombats because it is a day of catastrophe. There's an old adage, the show must go on, but tonight I wonder whether I can go on because I'm just overwhelmed with grief. Two reasons. On this day in 2007, John Howard was torn from the pages of history. He lost power and he lost the seat of Bennelong. But even more catastrophic, I have just learnt that the Pollywaffle is to be axed. The Pollywaffle, aged 62, is now officially a dead confection. It looked, of course, like a turd, but it tasted more like a chocolate eclair. And it was, when I was a kid, there was the Pollywaffle and the Varlet Crumble, and they were both, so exalted. And to think that the Pollywaffle is no longer with us. I mean, I wanted to celebrate the birthday of Walter Burley Griffin, who's been much discussed on the programme of late, because today's his birthday, but the death of the Pollywaffle and the tearing of John Howard from the pages of history just make me feel emotionally numb. Nonetheless, I suppose we'll soldier on. Do you remember the term? Remember the term Karl Rove came up with when he was running the George W. Bush campaign, compassionate conservatism? Well, a fascinating fellow in the UK called Philip Blond has come up with the notion of progressive conservatism, and the Tory leader David Cameron is ecstatic about it, and so are quite a lot of other people. It's, it seems to have a certain amount of intellectual heft, so we'll be talking to Philip Blond about it later. And then we're going to discuss an old murder story. We've told the story once already, but we're telling it from a different vantage point tonight. Bruce Shapiro, can you cheer me up? Because as you probably heard, I'm not a happy Vegemite.
I'm rending my garments, Philip. I'm going to go into the office today with my garments rent, and when people ask me, I will say it's because of the Pollywaffle, and they will look at me like I'm ripe for the madhouse.
You see, in your country, you don't know what the Pollywaffle is. You've recently been introduced to the Tim Tam, but the Pollywaffle, there's no Hershey bar. It's wonderful. Anyway, I can't read my notes through the tears. Tell me something happy. I believe something's happened the Democrats in the Senate.
Well, the Democrats in the Senate, they actually, for the first time in a long time, managed to hold their fractious caucus together long enough, late enough on Saturday night, to actually begin debate on health care. Now, you would think that beginning debate on something the country has been debating for the last year would be a no-brainer. But in fact, in the arcane rules of the Senate, the way that social legislation from the New Deal to civil rights has often been stalled has been by the 60-vote requirement to shut down debate on other issues and pick up a piece of legislation, the old filibuster technique. And it was really uncertain up until 8 o'clock on Saturday night whether the Democrats were going to have the votes to begin debate on the great health care bill of 2009. And in fact, it was only about an hour before that the final two holdouts, Senator Mary Landrieu from Louisiana and Senator Blanche Lincoln from Arkansas.
I love that name, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas. It's so Tennessee Williams, really.
It is, and there's something rather Tennessee Williams about her. And they did it for somewhat different reasons. In Mary Landrieu's case, and both of these are, self-described centrist Democrats who are opposed to the public option and all that sort of thing, but they did it for different reasons. Mary Landrieu's case, she agreed to vote to begin debate on health care after Senate Majority Leader Reid promised $300 million in additional Medicaid funding for the state of Louisiana, money that she's been seeking since Hurricane Katrina, but that had been stuck in the pipeline. This has led Republicans, who were united in their opposition, of course, to the health care bill, to call it the Louisiana Purchase, pretty funny reference, of course, to Thomas Jefferson's famous purchase of the Louisiana Territory in the early 19th century. Senator Blanche Lincoln has used this occasion to really carve out for herself a position as the key swing vote and one of the key leaders on the healthcare debate going forward. She now is in the catbird seat because as this goes forward, the Democrats are going to need to continue having 60 votes if they actually want to pass this thing. Mm. If they want to get past a Republican filibuster of the actual legislation once that begins after the Thanksgiving holiday, once the debate begins. And Blanche Lincoln has made it very clear that she does not regard beginning debate, voting to begin debate, as the same thing as supporting the final bill. She swears she will not support something with government health care in it. She wants a private health care bill. There is clearly much horse trading to be going on over the course of the next month, and it is going to be primarily a drama among the Democrats. That is the arena of play.
So the blue dogs, so-called, are still very, very powerful.
They are yelping like crazy. The blue dogs, the centrist Democrats, who are primarily fiscal conservatives, the last holdout of a group called the Democratic Leadership Council, which was founded to kind of get moderate white votes in the South back into the Democratic Party. Those folks have transformed into the Blue Dogs, the fiscal conservatives, Blanche Lincoln, Ben Nelson of Montana, who voted to begin debate, our friend Joe Lieberman. All of these people are saying we are going to hold this thing up if we don't get what we want. Now, on the other hand, they are also under a lot of pressure. Blanche Lincoln is up for re-election next year. She does not have, by any means, a unified state. Public health care remains quite popular. And there's going to be huge amounts of pressure from the White House, plus every legislative trick in the book and every backdoor deal in history. What we're going to see over the course of the next month, I think, is the most dramatic Senate debate, the most substantive one, but also the most uncertain outcome and dramatic since the Civil Rights era, when people used to, get up and read the phone book to filibuster civil rights bills. It's going to be like that.
I must say, from this side of the Pacific, I look at the U.S., and there are times when it seems virtually ungovernable, largely, because of the monstrously silly behaviour of the ultra-right Republicans, but then again because of this tradition the Democrats have of snatching defeat from the victory's jaws.
Well, it's important to remember that the Democratic Party has always had several different faces. It's not really one party. It's several very different ones, and we're seeing that play out in this. Historically, we associate the Democratic Party with, Teddy Kennedy liberalism. But in fact, the Democratic Party in the South through the early 1960s was the great bastion of segregation.
And, of course, Lyndon Johnson famously gave it away, didn't he? Because in his crusade for better, for better justice, social justice.
Well, both the Great Society and the Civil Rights Movement turned a lot of the White South to the Republican Party, leading a lot, though not all, of the Democratic leaders in the South to spend 20 years kind of in the wilderness trying to figure out how to get it back. And it was Bill Clinton's generation who created something called the Democratic Leadership Council, founded by Clinton, by Joe Lieberman, and a few others, out of a political analysis that said, the only way Democrats are going to get a majority in this country is if we can get the White South, and the only way we can get the White South is by a combination of economic progressivism and social issues conservatism. Now, how that translated over the 80s and 90s into the fiscal conservatives known as the Blue Dogs, who are actually by and large progressive on social issues. I mean, Blanche Lincoln is really quite decent on many of the social issues that the progressives care about. You know, then there's these other splits. You know, the Democratic Party is also comprised and has been of ethnic urban political machines. And in states like Michigan and in cities like Chicago, that includes very large Roman Catholic constituencies, which means a lot of clout for the Catholic Church. And that is playing out in health care as well, where you have...
anxieties about abortion.
Huge anxieties about abortion, which could yet sink this bill. And then you have pro-choice Democrats, who are the majority, but who also now have got to face the question of how far they're willing to go to swallow the House version of the bill, which includes anti-abortion provisions going well beyond anything that federal law currently has. So this is a complicated party and a complicated debate and very complicated political math for President Obama, who desperately wants health care in his stocking by December 25th.
It may be complicated, but you have the gift to simplify things, so even dull Australians like myself can comprehend what the hell's going on. Bruce, thanks for that. My break in the Beltway, Bruce Shapiro, columnist with The Nation, Exec Director of the Dart Centre for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University. And in a moment, we're going to go from Blue Dog Democrats to Red Tories when I talk to Philip Blond, who's in the business of political transformation, political party transformation. And I know with pleasure that Philip spells Philip the same way that I do. In other words, we're both double L Phillips. Before you play the music, I've suddenly had a vision splendid about how to save the polywaffle. This wonderful sweetmeat. The polywaffle should be marketed in Canberra, where all the pollies waffle.